Happy Monday, Fanatics. Welcome to a post-Christmas little sandwich New Year's podcast. What an intro that was here on the Iowa Clinic Men's Center podcast at CycloneFanatic.com, IAMenCenter.com. We'll talk more about them here momentarily as we bring you a special little – we're just doing basketball today as I bring in the Encyclopedia himself, Kirk Holland. Is this your debut on the Fanatic podcast, not counting the radio show?
This is my first time on the podcast.
Are you excited about this? Are you nervous?
No.
How would you describe your feelings right now as you enter the Cyclone Fanatic podcast?
I think excitement is the best word.
You can tell in your voice.
Me about ready to hit the ceiling. Yeah.
You can hear it in your voice.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you are just you're beside yourself.
I'm a poker player, even if I don't gamble, right?
Yeah. This is true. You don't gamble.
Well,
you had an opportunity the other night.
I'm in a $10 bowl pick'em right now. So
how are you doing?
I'm like tied for third.
How many people?
20.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah. So we'll see. See if I can bring home some bacon.
IAMenCenter.com. I want to thank the Iowa Clinic Men's Center as they have re-upped. They will continue on being the sponsor of the Cyclone Fanatic podcast throughout the Iowa State men's basketball season. Good choice. I have a feeling it will be very well listened to. Iowa Clinic Men's Center also going to bring us game chats throughout the 2015 portion. So starting on Saturday with that South Carolina game. Yeah, South Carolina over at the Barclays Center in New Jersey. Is it in New Jersey or New York?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's over in the New York area. And so we'll start having Iowa Clinic Men's Center game chats. Either I, Rob Gray, or Jared Stansbury will be running those. We'll plug the Twitter feeds through them, all that good stuff. But check that out on Saturday. Kirk, I like to – when I have new guests on the podcast, I like people to get to know them just a little bit more. Now you've got your hands full at home, don't you?
I do.
Tell the listeners about your girls. Was it a wild Christmas over at the Holland house?
There's some traveling. There's lots of wrapping paper.
How much like putting together of like dollhouses do you have to do?
Well, if they're not listening, I can say that I put together a gigantic dollhouse that would make most people blush.
Oh, the big man.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. The Santa actually did. You know, that's kind of one of the conundrums of that whole thing. Like, why does Santa get all the credit?
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's your money.
Yeah, and like, Santa didn't put that together for 2 nights, 3 hours each night in the basement. That was me. Come on. But no.
So when you do the gigantic dollhouse, do you put it together before Santa comes?
Yeah, we put it together. I got to put it together, hide it in the basement, and then they go to bed. We haul it up once we know it's safe, and then next morning they come down and excitement ensues.
Yes. That's good. But no, it's got to be cool to see the look on their face.
They love it, yeah. So
that's good.
You know, and you never know which gift they'll get the most excited about. But this year, there's that, and they each got the two. I have three girls, 6, 4, and 1. The youngest one just turned 1. So the older ones got scooters with wheels that light up. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
They're kind of disappointed. It's a little chilly. But we're making room in the garage right now.
Yeah, we're just scooting around the garage. All right.
Yeah. So
the worst is like they don't like coats. I've noticed with my nieces and nephew, like when they get a coat, they're not real happy.
It's one of those amazing things. Like kids don't get cold. Like they do only when they want to whine about it. But if they're like into something, they could like walk around in their swimsuits in December. It's weird.
Well, hopefully your girls aren't doing that. We don't want them to get pneumonia.
No. I mean, my wife keeps us in line, so it's mostly safe.
All right, let's talk basketball. You had a nice piece today, your basketball blabberings. Is this like a weekly column we're going to get now, or is this like a bi-weekly? Because we've had a couple of them now. They're very intriguing.
I don't know if it's weekly. I started doing them last year when I had my own site, and it was kind of – I would stumble across things. You know, they don't really require 1,000 words each, but they're kind of just little nuggets I find that I want to point out. And as soon as I get a collection of 2 to 5 of them, I'll throw them together or – and I don't know what to call it, but I'm big on alliteration.
You like alliteration.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Well, and if there's anything worse with doing this stuff than trying to think of a name for a title for an article, it's the worst thing in the world.
It's the hardest. Yeah.
Yeah.
People are either good at them or they're atrocious at them. And I think that like of our whole team here, I don't think any of us would call headline creation our strength.
It's like one in a year, I'll be like, all right, I like that one. Like I'll have it in my head for like 3 months before I do it. But most of the part, yeah, they're awful.
No, you do a nice job. I thought today's piece was intriguing. I want to go through here momentarily. I want to talk about the Big 12. I thought well, we can just start right there, as the Big 12 season is just around the corner. Iowa State, of course, has Mississippi Valley State on Wednesday. That'll be a 6 p.m. tip on Cyclones.tv. Are you going to that?
No, we sold our tickets.
You guys want to come over to our house?
You know, we're kind of in flux right now.
Did I send you the Facebook invite?
I got the invitation.
So you're not coming.
Well,
yeah, it's all right.
You're kind of putting me on the spot for everyone to see here.
Don't worry about
listen
it.
To.
No, I know you don't want to come to my party. Rob's covering that for us. I said this 2 years ago, and I meant it. I will not cover New Year's Eve games.
I think this is the first one I've skipped.
Yeah, I won't cover a New Year's Eve game.
Will you go to it?
Nope. the only reason I showed up last year is to pay my respect to Johnny Orr.
Yeah.
I showed up.
I mean, that was, yeah.
I watched the first 10 minutes, and then we had to go. Actually, the only reason I wasn't there last year, I'm talking a big game with this boycott, but Bloom got engaged, and I was a part of helping him finagle the evening.
Right, right.
This was planned out months in
advance.
That
was far more crucial than your presence at Northern Illinois last year.
Yes, this is very true. And, Rob's going to cover it for us. And I'm going to stay at home, have some people over, watch the game. You were invited, but clearly you and your wife don't want to be friends with us, so we'll move on. So then Iowa State has South Carolina on January 3rd, and then Big 12 play kicks off, tips off, whatever. So you, in your basketball blabberings, amongst other topics today, you touched on the possibility of a Big 12 champion going 13-5.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is fascinating to me because – it's very realistic, but chances are, does that happen, or you think somebody does better than that?
If Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Iowa State are all as good as we think they are, then I think you will see a 13-5 maybe winning it, because I think all four of those teams will – the safe pick is saying they'll protect home court against each other. But then you also have Baylor, West Virginia, and Oklahoma State – and even Kansas State, even though they're worse. That's the thing, is that they're kind of like an old school Iowa State where they might be really bad, but they can beat a good team at home.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying if Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Iowa State protect home court against everyone basically, but then they drop one on the road to one of those teams, you could have two teams go 13-5.
Is Kansas State really bad?
I haven't seen much of them. I watched them when they played Long Beach State a while ago, and
that was a bad game. They walked into a hornet's nest that night.
And Marcus Foster wasn't looking that good. I mean, Eric McKnight plays for Long Beach State, so
here's Kansas State's resume: the five losses, the 69-60 loss at Long Beach. They were actually an underdog going into that game.
Right.
They were like a 3 or 4 point underdog. I remember that night. They lost to Arizona by 4.
They were in that game.
On a neutral floor. I think
that
was
in Maui.
Yeah, I think they ran out of gas that night and got crushed by Pitt the following night. Which, whatever.
Right.
They probably, you know, after going toe-to-toe with Arizona, I think that picking them to beat Pitt would have been a stretch. Lost at Tennessee by 1 point. And then they slipped up against Texas Southern on...
Well, I think it was yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was yesterday. 58-56. Ugly game. In between there.
Well, and they had like an 8-point lead with a minute and a half to go.
Yeah. They've beaten Texas A&M. I don't know what that means exactly. They've beaten Purdue.
It means nothing.
Yeah. Point is, I don't know if they're as bad as their 7-5 record would indicate right now. Just when you factor in the Octagon of Doom, I think you have a lot of teams like that in the Big 12, especially when you factor in like a Baylor, Oklahoma State. That's like going to Colorado back in the day, man. TCU, where you had these teams who were capable of beating you, but they literally lull you to sleep in the arena that they play in.
Well, yeah, and West Virginia, I think, is kind of a hostile place.
Yep.
I mean, that might just be perception after last year when they were so amped for DeAndre Kane, but it's a little bit hostile.
Yeah, I think it is.
And Oklahoma State, I mean, they're good enough to beat teams at home. So, and there's a lot that needs to be fleshed out. Like, TCU, obviously, they haven't lost, and their schedule is awful, but that doesn't mean they can't beat teams that are better too. I mean,
I think we all knew though coming into the season TCU would be much improved.
Yes.
They're a much better team than they were a year ago.
Right. Yeah, they are for sure. And they've got some good players on their roster. So I wouldn't be surprised if they pick off someone that you wouldn't expect them to at home. I mean, they did a couple years ago with Kansas. So
I wouldn't be shocked if Kansas lost at TCU.
No, I wouldn't. I mean, the league is just ridiculous right now.
What are you, Texas Tech clearly the worst team?
Yeah, I mean, right now. I think you could make the case for Kansas State, depending on how this goes. Only because of the loss to Texas Southern. I mean, if they beat them, it's kind of like, okay, they lost to some good teams. But then that loss yesterday is kind of puzzling. And I know they beat Michigan State, but they also lost to, like, every other team they played before that by 40.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so take that however you want.
Okay, but. So if I were to say Kirk Holland in Cyclonepedia, I need you to give me an odds-on Big 12 – or not an odds-on, but who would you say is the favorite to win the league based off of all the funky little statistical stuff that you did this morning at CycloneFanatic.com?
Oh, I did this a week ago.
Okay. Well, it was good work, and it was a fascinating read. I'm not just saying that. So, tentatively, I mean, I still – even after the loss at Temple, don't you have to put Kansas number one?
It's really scary as an Iowa State fan to say this. And
I know where you're going.
I think, honestly, if you just look at rosters, you look at how teams have played, and I think Iowa State still has some work to do to prove they can beat some good teams. Like, the South Carolina game is turning out to be a much better game than we would have guessed.
It's Frank Martin.
But you might consider one of their better games being that they played terrible against Maryland, and they were still in the game. And right now, Maryland's a top 12 team.
Yeah. Who would have thought that when we left Kansas City? My God.
Right. And so right now, I would Texas and Iowa State, but I didn't see the Texas-Stanford game. I was pretty surprised by that. But Oklahoma, I think, can be really good. But right now, I think they're kind of relying on the jump shot. And I don't know, but they have plenty of talent.
Kansas is still beating good teams.
Yeah, they have. And Temple's one of those teams where every year they're good, but they're not top 25 good.
Weird place to go play on December 22nd, you know?
Yeah.
Guys are out of school.
And Kansas has had a hell of a difficult schedule in the non-conference. I mean, off the charts difficult. And it's not just by playing only marquee games. It's the middle games they play are far better than some teams' best games.
Neutral floor against Rhode Island.
Right.
Tennessee, neutral floor.
Going to Temple, Michigan State, neutral floor. I mean,
Florida at Georgetown?
Yeah, I'm guessing TCU hasn't played a single team better than the worst team that Kansas has played without even looking.
No, I would. The worst team Kansas has played, I'm looking at their schedule right now.
I mean, they played Ryder, I think, at home.
The Lafayette?
Yeah, so
I mean, yeah.
Kansas, I still think, is kind of in a conundrum with – conundrum twice in one podcast.
It's okay. It's a good word. Makes you sound smart.
Kansas between a rock and a hard place with they're an undersized team that sometimes can't make shots. And it's okay to be undersized, but you better be able to shoot the ball.
Which I don't know if they can.
Not consistent. Like, Brandon Green was huge against Georgetown. And last year when I watched him, I thought he was mostly awful. So if he's the guy they have to rely on to hit threes, then, I mean, maybe this is like his Naz Long coming out season for all I know.
Mm-hmm. Going back to Kansas State for a second, I'm just reading something. They made 2 of 8 free throws in the final 69 seconds yesterday.
That'll cost you.
I just don't think Bruce Weber has it. This is the same thing we saw at Illinois.
Yeah,
it's the exact same thing.
He coaches other guys' players really well.
Yeah. And I'm reading this quote from Gibson after the game about his team having no energy. Where does that come from?
Well, it's 2 days after Christmas or whatever.
Yeah.
But you would think after Texas Southern, even though they're like 2-10, they just won at Michigan State. Like, sometimes college kids do things where I shake my head and, like, I can't understand how stupid they are. But you can still see where something like that, they're still thinking, it's still Texas Southern.
Yeah. So right now, you think Iowa State's a favorite to win the league?
I think them and Texas, yeah.
Over Kansas?
Right now,
you wouldn't
now,
put
yeah.
Kansas in that conversation at all?
No, they're in the conversation. I mean, they're very much in. But you're asking me to pick a favorite. I don't want to
pick the winner.
I don't want to pull the Switzerland three-way tie at the top.
Damn it, Kirk. It's December 29th. Pick who wins the Big 12.
I'm going to pick Texas because I'm a scared Iowa State fan. But
I love it. But everybody feels that way. No, you're exactly right. It seems too good to be true.
That, and we still have a lot to learn with meshing in Jameel McKay. And I feel like we've seen, what, one game in the last 3 weeks? It's a crazy stretch.
There's a lot
of
warm fuzzies floating around after the recent, but yeah, they've yet to be, they've yet to be tested with the McKay deal.
Right. South Carolina will go a long way to that. I mean, they handled Arkansas. They mostly handled Alabama. They've done really well
I do like the start to the Big 12 schedule, though.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about this a while ago, that if they can somehow win one of the two at West Virginia or at Baylor.
Yeah, which then, I think they will.
Then you beat Kansas at home, Oklahoma State at home, and Kansas State at home, and you start off 4-1, and then you're going to Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And then you have Texas at home, who you can beat at home, and TCU at home, and then you go to Lawrence. I mean,
I'm glad that they get tested early in the Big 12, though. I feel like this team's going to be ready for that.
Yeah, I think so. But Oklahoma State's a good one to start with. It's a good team to play, and I'm glad we're starting at home. But mm-hmm. I think if they have championship aspirations, you have to get one of those two at West Virginia or Baylor,
okay.
probably.
Yeah, your formula. You threw down a formula in your column today. How to win a Big 12 championship.
And basically my theory is you have to win at home against everybody.
Yep, you got to win out at home.
It's okay to lose to the other.
So that's 9 wins.
Yep, it's okay to lose to the other tier one teams who right now I have as Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Iowa State on the road. But there's some tier two teams, Baylor, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, who you have to beat at least one or two of them on the road. And you obviously have to.
Who is your tier one?
Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Iowa State. So you have 3 games on the road against those other schools for if you're one of those teams.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to lose to them on the road. But if you steal one, that's great, obviously.
And who can't you lose to? TCU?
TCU, Kansas
Texas
State,
Tech.
Texas Tech. I think you have to sweep.
See, I think Kansas State, I don't know if I put them down with those two quite yet.
I talked about that. I had a hard time between Kansas State and TCU. You could almost jump up into that middle tier and just put Texas Tech at the bottom.
Yeah, I think that's the route I would go.
We still have a lot to learn about everyone. Because losing at TCU right now, it doesn't look like it'll be the worst thing in the world.
I'm like you. I think I wrote this or I said this somewhere last week on a podcast about TCU's ranking. I thought that was ridiculous
they literally have, I think, the worst schedule in the country right now.
They've dropped out of the top 25.
Like, did some people just vote for them last week and not realize what they had done? Like, they saw their record, so they vote for
Probably.
Them. And then they got ridiculed.
Probably.
They were getting ridiculed on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, and they're like, what have I done?
They can't celebrate with their family because they voted TCU into the top 25. Yeah, so in the AP poll this week that came out earlier today, I like to go by the AP poll. We can reference the...
Yeah, I don't even look at the coaches' poll.
They dropped out. They're to 26 this week. Iowa State noteworthy is at a noteworthy 9th this week, so they clearly improve. Iowa State is a top-ranked Big 12 team in both polls. In the AP, Texas is 11th. Kansas is 13th, with West Virginia and Oklahoma at 17 and 18. Baylor is ranked at number 22. I think they're probably – that's a team where – is probably a little bit better than most thought it would be.
Yeah, they are. And I'm really curious about them. I've seen them play a little bit, but not much. I mean,
they got a really good coach, too.
He's really good at something.
Elite Eight's not good enough for you?
Well, here's the thing. His 2 Elite Eight runs, he played nobodies on the. He had the benefit of upsets, which is part of it. I can accept it. He can put those on his resume.
Don't you be hating on.
I'm not hating on
Scotty.
Him. I'm just saying.
Yeah, no.
You'd be like a 6, an 11, and a 10 in those years to get to the Elite Eight.
No, you did point out, though, and this is interesting, that Maryland is 12th, and they're 11th in the USA Today poll. Who would have thought that, though?
Yeah, and some people are still upset with the rankings thing anymore. It's just...
It's for fodder. It's for stuff like this.
Yeah, because what are we voting on? Who we think's the best team? Or because, say they didn't have to play at Kentucky. Say they played... Vanderbilt. They beat Vanderbilt, so they have one loss.
Yeah.
So then would they still be ranked behind Iowa State?
No.
Like, are they worse of a team because they lost to Kentucky?
No.
You know?
No.
Like, that's where the ranking thing gets all out of whack, I think. Especially when, like, some people... Seth Davis was big on it a couple weeks ago with how can Iowa State be ranked ahead of Maryland, but then he has other teams that are ranked ahead of teams they lost to. Like, there's no way you can avoid it. It's how it works.
Yeah. All right, so let's kind of move forward from here. Iowa State has that game on Wednesday night. Fred Hoiberg going for his 100th career victory. I'm kind of working on a little preview right now. I don't know. I think it'd be cool for Hoiberg. Well, he will bold prediction here. Iowa State will beat Mississippi Valley State on Wednesday. Cool, though, that he'll do it on the anniversary of Johnny Orr's death.
Right.
I think that that's noteworthy. And then they got to go to South Carolina, or excuse me, to New York on Saturday. And storyline here, two obvious storylines, I think, where you have Dustin Hoge returning to New York, where he put on a Superman cape last right. year at Madison Square Garden. And also, you know, I think Frank Martin, that's interesting. He's yeah. coached against Iowa State so many times.
Yep. And Hoiberg for 2 years. So, I mean.
Yeah, they know each other very well. I think that's an interesting aspect of the next two games. And then, you know, then we really get into the grind. That is the Big 12. What's – I guess final expectations from you, Kirk. I mean, this is a situation where – I mean, ever since I've been doing this, Iowa State hasn't had this much juice. Because usually we're used to seeing, maybe not last year, but usually we're used to seeing like these Iowa State teams are kind of struggling to, you know, to get that chemistry built up in the non-conference. They finally do right around Christmas time. And then, bam, they kind of explode onto the scene really February or so. Now they're playing at a faster pace. Do the numbers, because it looks to me like they're playing at a faster pace than they have been. Do the numbers add up to that with the fancy little things that you do?
I would have to look, which I can do right quick. But I think they're actually playing slower this year. So
seriously?
Far. I think so.
No yep. way.
I'm going to log into my Ken Pomeroy machine.
Yeah, because this is what I wanted to get into in depth with you. What are the advanced statistics tell us so far about this Iowa State basketball team?
They're basically playing the exact same as last year. So last year, their adjusted tempo, which I don't even know exactly. That's one thing I don't really know exactly how he adjusts the tempo based off schedule. But last year, they averaged 71.3 possessions per game, which was 16th. And right now, this year, it's 71.7, which is 17th.
Mm-hmm.
So, 71.1. But it's the exact same thing, basically. I mean, you're splitting the tiniest of hairs at that point. I mean, as far as like the four factors and the advanced stuff that you'd look at, it's the exact same method that all Hoiberg teams have fallen to. They shoot the ball well. They don't turn it over. They don't really get much off the offensive glass. I mean, they'll get some here and there that help out. The defense is a little better than it has been.
I get annoyed when people say Iowa State's defense sucks.
Well, it doesn't suck. And I would argue last year they finished on Pomeroy in defense maybe like in the 70s. A lot of it that you can't ever really capture well with stats, I don't think, is timeliness. Like,
yeah.
If you're giving up points left and right, but then at the end you need one crucial stop and you routinely get that one crucial stop, then it's kind of like, okay. But defensively, they're doing the same thing they've always done. Teams are shooting it pretty well against them, and they're not really turning it over very much. But they're 17th in defensive rebounding. They're keeping teams off the line more than anyone else. So it's the standard Hoiberg blueprint, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm. But how is this? How do you think this all changes with Jameel McKay?
Well,
because defensively, they should get better, right?
They should get better.
Shouldn't that speed you up?
Not necessarily? No. And there's still so much of it that plays into
it. My point is, if you're forcing more turnovers, isn't that when you want to run?
Yeah. And there was a point this year where they were head over heels better in forcing turnovers. Like right now, they're 183rd in turnover percentage on defense. And last year, they were 210th. I think there was a while there where they're in the 150s. I think McKay, I think some people are hoping that he'll be able to handle the other team's big man, whether it's the guy from Drake that's the size of a refrigerator
Ivan Drago.
Cameron Ridley. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to be able to handle that guy, obviously, by himself getting back down. And I think they're still going to double. He'll help with a lot of recovery issues where when there's a reversal and the defender gets blown by an offense, he can slide over and contest the shot better, and as long as the guy behind him rotates well, then that's where you'll see the biggest benefit. I think you'll see off the ball. I mean, I bet I don't have any numbers to throw against it, but
you don't have to have numbers. This is just a podcast. Well, I mean, just tell us what you think.
shot blockers are almost always blocking shots of guys they aren't guarding. I mean, that's they're coming from the weak side where the offensive player is worrying about the guy that's defending him, and he has no chance to get over him and the guy that comes flying in. So I think that's where you'll see it with the help. I think you might see a little more ball pressure or contesting passing lanes, which some guys have kind of – it sounds like they've been doing kind of on their own outside of the what Hoiberg is kind of wanting them to do, but I think he's okay with it. But, yeah, that's one thing I was really interested about early in the year, if they would try and force the tempo defensively by really trying to get the offense uncomfortable. I think part of the reason that maybe they're not doing a whole lot is because they don't want to get Monte Morris in foul trouble. I think McKay will make an obvious impact on defense. I think it's hard to say exactly how much right now.
You just brought up Monte Morris. You came up with a graph, which apparently I botched in a tweet. I thought that the graph that you threw out there was all time.
Well, it's essentially that. I mean, like, the all time assist to turnover list would actually include like Ron Falinchak. I mean, it's like
who? Yeah, most
post
people
guy
would
from
go,
the early 80s.
Yeah, and, most guy would go.
And it's also kind of messed up too because turnovers weren't tracked until 1982 and 83, so I kind of had to eliminate some years of guys that, like, if they were playing 2 years before that and 2 years after that, I didn't include the 2 years before that. But yeah, I mean, it's basically, I tried to grab a snapshot of guards and I botched it too because someone pointed out to me I left off Ron Bayless. But I tried to grab a snapshot of guards and plus Royce White basically. And
what did it tell you?
Monte Morris is a better point guard than you.
Duh.
I mean, you know it when you look at the assist to turnover numbers. I think his career right now is 5.2, something like that.
Yeah.
J.C. Holloway is number two at like 2.8.
Yeah.
J.C. Holloway was like, he wasn't creating.
Consummate just game manager.
Yeah. He was like the guy that never turned the ball over.
He was Trent Dilfer.
I would hate to slight J.C. by calling him Trent Dilfer. But, I mean, he was the guy that never ever turned the ball
over.
He
made a living off of managing.
Yeah. And I mean, he would get the offense going. He was tough as nails and he had all the other intangibles. But like the crazy thing is, like Bloom has been pointing out with Jamal Tinsley, like that dude was a walking turnover. But when you left, you forgot about it because of the other awesome things he did.
Mm-hmm.
But in the grand scheme of things, the overall value, it's hard to look at Monte Morris, the overall value, and he's at 5.2 and Jamal Tinsley's like at 1.7 for assist to turnover ratio. And not kind of wonder what Monte will continue to develop into.
Is Morris more valuable than George Niang, or is that an impossible question to answer?
That's probably an impossible question to answer. And yeah. I know Hines has talked about a lot that how much different the offense looks when Morris isn't on the court.
Yeah.
Which it does. I mean, I think Naz has done pretty well when he's had to handle the ball, and I think George has done pretty well when he's had to kind of get the offense set.
I still just don't trust Naz as my first point guard.
No, I don't either. But he's
in the Big 12 against Mississippi Valley State, maybe.
Yeah.
But you saw against when he had to handle it against Maryland.
Right.
They really struggled. The offense really struggled that night. And they didn't make a shot either, which
he isn't the guy you want to be the primary ball handler, but he has really developed his ability to attack. Maybe sucking more defenders out than he did last year, but he's really attacking the rim well. If you wanted to try and put an overall value between Niang and Morris, I think it's pretty close to impossible.
But I think heading into the season, we all say Niang's the most valuable player on this team.
Yeah. Definitely.
I think it's like a 1A, 1B conversation now, though.
Yeah. I think it is. And if you're into Pomeroy at all, Monte Morris's offensive rating right now is 130.4, which that means nothing to you. It's just a random number. But George Niang is 120. But the difference there is the more often a player is used, the harder it is to keep that same level that high. Like, it's easier to be a 50% free throw shooter if you shoot two than if you shoot 100.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the concept. But Monte Morris, he has the 42nd best offensive rating right now, because he never turns the ball over, and he's shooting extremely well, like 54% effective field goal percentage.
Yeah.
And that's with at the beginning of the year when everyone was watching, kind of thinking like, man, his three-point shot's not falling. So, I mean, he's just a rock.
What did he shoot last year? Like 41, 42%?
He shot like 40% last year, yeah.
Where is he at from three now? Do we have that in front of us?
I can get it, yeah. And, you know, that was one of my keys coming into this year because I didn't know if last year if he was a 40% three-point shooter or
if
that was kind of the anomaly. Right now he's 9 of 28, so he's 32%, which is good enough.
To me, that seems that's more of a Monte Morris number.
Yeah,
I think that we'll get.
If anyone on Iowa State is shooting over 30%, like, that is fabulous. Like, I'll sign for that, almost any day of the week. With the understanding that some guys, like, Niang's up near 40, Hogue's at 5 of 11, DeJon Jones is at 38, which is a huge bonus.
That's higher than we thought.
Yeah, and Naz Long's over 40. So, I mean, if...
I think Thomas and Long can both be the 40 guys.
Yeah, and I was talking to my brother about it, and I wanted to do it while I'm off work for a while. I don't know if I'll get around to it, but Matt Thomas, he's 11 of 33, so 33%, same as he was last year. Just by my eyeball test from watching him, and I think more of his shots come off balance, not with his feet set. Like, the patented Naz Long three-pointer is him camping out in the corner.
Yep.
Something happening and him getting a wide-open look. His feet are set. He goes up, he shoots.
He loves that left corner, man.
Matt Thomas... he doesn't seem to be in that spot as often. They run more plays for him where he's kind of curling off screens. I wanted to compare how often he's shooting off balance instead of with his feet set to Naz. Because I think that's part of it. And actually, I was watching the Alabama game this morning. All three of his threes that he started off with that he made, all of them, even the one that was the secondary break from like Columbia, Missouri, just about, his feet were set. And he's going up. He's not curling and falling to one side. But I think if you can get him to where more of his shots are where he's doing the Jake Sullivan from his freshman year, just standing and waiting for someone to throw him the ball, then you'll see his production go up from there.
I still have a lot of faith in him.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I still just think that he's going to have – he'll be a couple games where Iowa State doesn't win without him.
Yeah, and there's all – I mean, Naz Long has been absolutely phenomenal since, like, the midway point of the conference season last year.
I would say the Oklahoma State game where he hit the triple overtime when Naz really turned the corner.
Yeah, and I don't have the numbers now, but I've written about it before. But last year, the first 9 games, Naz was amazing. The middle 17 games, I think it was, maybe middle 18 games, it was not so amazing.
He just disappeared.
And then the last 9, he was just unbelievable again.
Yeah.
Like, maybe this is the Naz Long that we'll always have. But if he goes through a slump like that, Matt's there to make shots. George Niang's making a lot more threes this year than he did last year, percentage-wise. DeJon Jones, like I said, he's anything he gives us is a bonus, in my opinion. But I think Matt Thomas will come very much in handy the rest of the way.
A couple other topics I wanted to get to before we wrap things up. Got about 10 minutes to go here. Did you see that my guy, Art Briles, promoted his son?
I did see
that. Offensive coordinator.
I didn't really think about it very hard, but I did see that.
This is notable.
If you're looking at the Cyclone Fanatic pick'em, you know I picked games pretending they're basketball games because football season is over.
Well done. Well done.
I was like, I know more about these basketball teams than football.
Who did you pick in? Who did you pick in Michigan State and Baylor because of that?
I think I picked Baylor to cover. There's some times where it was kind of dicey, where I was like, well.
You're not picking the Big Ten team.
Right.
I think this is notable, though, not just so I can gush all over Art Briles some more, but Kendall Briles, who's been the wide receiver coach and passing coordinator for 7 years now at Baylor, has been named the offensive coordinator. He will call the plays in the Cotton Bowl against Michigan State. I don't know how that impacts it. He's Art Briles' son, so he's got to be – he's got genius in him, we know. But I thought it was interesting. I thought it was noteworthy here for the podcast is, of course, the longtime Baylor offensive coordinator, Phil Montgomery, just became the head coach at Tulsa. But that's – to me, that – and the reason I brought this up more than anything is that maybe for Big 12 fans, maybe the most interesting bowl game of them all. I think TCU Ole Miss is very intriguing. As we record this right now, there's a bunch of really good – the Big 12's got a triple header today. I don't want to talk too much about them as by the time many of you listen to this, it's going to be old news.
Especially because the Liberty Bowl is nothing but bad memories for me.
Did you go?
Yeah.
I actually enjoyed Memphis other than the game.
That was fine. It was a little cold. We were at the game. We left from the game, drove through the night, got home at 4 o'clock in the morning. And then I got up and went to the the Yale basketball game.
Oh yeah, I remember. I remember watching that Vikings game with you at the bar.
Yeah, yeah, because they're playing, I think, the Bears to get the playoffs.
The Packers.
Or Packers, yeah.
To get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Christian Ponder, what a big comeback, I believe.
His career will only go up from here, I'm sure of it.
So speaking of Christian Ponder and the Vikings, that was another – so you're a Vikings fan too. I know a lot of Vikings fans listening to the podcast right now. You know, they beat the Bears yesterday. I actually feel really good about the future of the Vikings right now. Am I just talking myself into disappointment in the future?
I didn't follow it super close this year for whatever reason, but – there were so many games where they were in there, they had it, and they lost some close games. They still finished 7-9. I was actually hoping that they would continue to just play well and lose. So you have kind of the good vibes, but you maybe a little better draft pick, even though it probably doesn't matter.
They still, I think they're going to get like the 11th pick.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah, we'll take that. But they, okay, so I.
But
I
they
think
did all that without a running back.
Without a running back, with a horrible offensive line.
Yeah.
With Matt Khalil just being a total disaster every time he steps on.
And Kyle Rudolph was hurt a lot of the year. Harrison Smith was hurt a lot of the year. I mean, there's been a lot of guys on defense that have improved a lot this year.
Yeah, Anthony Barr, probably the best rookie in football.
Yeah.
If not the one of.
I mean, Sharif Floyd has come up big. Xavier Rhodes has come up big. So it's nothing but warm and fuzzies right now.
I think
really winning many games.
So what do you need, though? You need an elite quarterback to win it. Not necessarily, but I think in today's day and age, you may need an elite quarterback to win a Super Bowl.
I think that's more true than it
more true now than it was 10 years ago.
Than it was when Baltimore won with aforementioned Trent
Correct.
Dilfer.
I don't know if Teddy – I'm not saying he's elite, but I think he could be potentially. I think he could be a really good quarterback in the league. You need a strong head coach, and I love Zimmer. I don't know what about him. I love the guy.
I love Zimmer, and – I mean, the one guy that maybe he's kind of been feuding with that had a bad year is Cordarrelle Patterson.
But how much was he hurt by Adrian Peterson being out,
right,
though?
Right, plenty. But Bridgewater, he has far exceeded expectations. I mean, he basically, I'll just say he had a better year than Christian Ponder's ever had.
I mean, come on. You know, you better watch it because Samantha Ponder could come after you.
I hear she comes at people and blocks them, and our guy from the Daily.
Oh yeah, Dean.
Yeah, Dean.
Old Dean. I remember when that happened last year. I like Sam Ponder. She was
We knew Sam Ponder before she was famous.
When she was Sam Steele.
Yeah.
I interviewed her for Fanatic.
I remember everyone's like, "This is the coolest thing you've ever done."
I interviewed her, and she only had like 2,000 Twitter followers at the time. Because she was just this new...
She was on FCS.
Yeah, this new reporter.
Only Iowa State fans
who nobody had heard of on Fox College Sports.
Right.
And she did like... Because Iowa State was Iowa State.
On
football.
FCS every week.
They were on like six times on FCS. And she... You know, I remember she like got to be like on a first name basis with like players.
She just bought a house in Ames.
Yeah, I remember my boy Ben Lamock like would always like tweet at her and be like, "What's up?" Like he'd always be like, "Hey, you coming to our game on Saturday?" Like, you know, and like she was this hot commodity around Ames, and I called her right up and she did the interview and she was awesome.
Try and call her now.
Yeah, I guarantee.
First, she hasn't seen Iowa State football in probably since that
season.
She
goes, "Who?"
Yeah.
Who are these guys? Was she there for the Texas? Yeah, she was there for the Texas game last year, right? When the Jeremiah George strip and Iowa State got screwed.
I don't know because I was at the games.
I think she was
and
there.
That
for
wasn't
that
really one.
One
I was keen on rewatching more than that last play from.
Yeah, I'm almost positive that was her. Was she there for the Oklahoma State game in 2011, the Friday night game? I almost think that was her too. I remember watching the when Rhodes is like celebrating with
right.
Him.
Yeah, I think that.
So she just is like our poster girl, man.
Yeah, I mean,
we love her.
We need to bring her back, maybe.
Yeah, I think that
maybe Cyclone TV can sign her up.
Man, you think they got the funds for that?
I don't know.
Got the funds for that, then they need to give Hoiberg more money, man. Just blank check for Freddie, which I think they should realistically do anyway.
Yeah, I think it was maybe a Rob Doster article with it was Hines when he interviewed him with he's saying. Long-term Iowa State basketball program, we don't know how sustainable it is because it's kind of built on the shoulders of Hoiberg, which I kind of agree with, and that's why like the league that shall not be mentioned is so scary for some to think of. It's not that it'd be so bad for him to go. It's just that you don't know if anyone else can come in and recreate what he has done.
Yeah. And don't you think that who knows what Fred wants to do, but he'll think about that too. I think that will absolutely play into his future.
I was actually, this is the stuff I think about on 2-hour car rides when I'm driving at like 11 o'clock on Christmas Eve.
Are the girls asleep at this point?
Three of the four. Well, two of the four.
My wife
was awake, okay, and the baby was not happy with being in her car seat.
Gotcha.
But I'm thinking, you know, we got Fred to come to Iowa State when he was in high school by doing like this petition. If I need to walk door to door from everyone in Story County and get them to sign their name to get them to stick around, then I would take that bullet. You know, I'll do that.
You would walk door to door?
Yeah, if that's what I got to do. I mean, it's so crazy to think about now, but and I didn't really realize it until like the middle of that Royce White year, is how much more fun college basketball is when we aren't awful at it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
same with football.
I mean, even like the 2005 season for basketball, like that was fun. But I mean, every year now for the last 3.5 years, we're in the tournament. The last 2 years have been just out of this world. I was actually going to look at it, but the amount of time we spent in the polls, the amount of it's just off the charts.
Well, that's like when Jamie Pollard said last year after he extended Fred or gave him a raise. He's talking about how this is our final offer, basically. We can't do anything.
Yeah.
To me, that's dumb, because if you add up what this man is
right,
not only brought, but continued to bring, and then a brand recognition and all that, he's worth way more.
And I think a lot of that money is in futures, because it's still a program that, I mean, there's no reason that Iowa State, and this is one of those scary things to talk about as an Iowa State fan again, there's no reason they can't be a annual top 6-8 program.
Yeah, it's, if you had the coach.
I mean, Iowa State is not a blue blood, but there's no reason they can't fill that void. I mean, if he stays here for 10 more years, I still think there's going to be some down years probably, but there's no reason he can't just continue to build teams like this. And I mean, by year 10 of that, the value is far more than whatever his salary is. I thought last year when they came out with the extension, I was, yeah, he's a top 10 paid coach, so we think we did okay. Like, I would have probably given him a little more money. Like,
I would have.
I think you can find the money, because the last thing in the world you want is for that to be an issue. Like, I don't know that it is. I don't know that it ever would be, and I hate that we're even talking about this, but that's the last thing you ever want. So just blow it out of the water and go crazy, and maybe Fred would be like, no, that's too much.
It can't be the issue.
Exactly.
You can't let it be the issue.
Right.
At the end of the day. All right. Probably better wrap it up. You got any big plans for New Year's other than not coming to my party?
Well, I'm not now, since you're trying to guilt me into it.
I'm not trying to guilt you into anything. It's just a, you know, my wife and I ask you and your wife to do a lot of things, and you guys never want to hang out with us. And
well, you know,
we're having a nice kid-friendly party on New Year's Eve, and you were invited like a month ago, and you're still choosing not to come. But that's your prerogative. I mean, you don't have to hang out with us.
Well, I know I don't. And, you know, I was going to try and get you to Polk City. You know, we need to get our dogs together.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, but
Dirks.
Polk City has a nice little doggy wash in with the car wash. I took Clyde to last night, gave him a bath at the car wash. It's pretty sweet.
Doesn't he get cold?
It's heated. It's a little box. It's like a big phone booth.
Seriously?
Yeah.
This is intriguing to me.
I knew he would like, the owner was actually there and was like, I should get your number. I know just the guy to promote this for you.
So Dirks, the other night, it was New Year's Eve Eve, and Christmas Eve Eve. Sorry, you know, it was like that really like fat wet snow, just the annoying, like it was basically slushing from the sky.
Right.
And my satellite went out.
Yep.
And I was like, dang it, because it was like 8 o'clock.
Mine went out when I was putting together that damn dollhouse.
Oh, okay. There you go. So, I took a broom out there, and I'm like, okay, I'll just let Dirk's potty while I'm at it. And the little bastard, climbed for some reason. He was hunting a rabbit in the backyard. And the rabbit went underneath our deck. Somehow, he broke through the fence that I have created. And you should have seen how muddy this dog was.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I was mad.
It's just the worst.
Because like, it was a golden retriever. I mean, for them to dry is a multiple-hour ordeal because their hair is so long. But then you get mud caked in there. Oh, it was just a disaster.
This thing last night even had a blow dryer, and I used it for 2.5 minutes because you only have so much time. So I was trying to save enough time, thinking I left enough. He was still soaked. Well, and he hated it too.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, yeah, it was the worst idea ever for him, but he got some treats out of it.
That's good for him. Good for Clyde.
Clyde enjoyed it, I think. And my bathtub has less dog hair in it now. So.
Yeah, that's the pain of it, because it goes down in there, and then you got to clean the drain. And
right.
Not a good thing. All right. Kirk, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me, man.
I enjoyed your piece today. Hopefully you get some more time off from work, and you can come in here and record with me in the future.
We can work on something.
All right. Keep fighting the good fight in the engineering world, all right, buddy?
That's what I try and do.
All right. Hey, I've just been informed via an Adam Gray text message that we will be doing a FAWcast tomorrow. So that'll be like a Tuesday after work podcast. We probably should name it something different for tomorrow. But Mark Charter Real Estate will be coming in. Gray and I, you know how those things usually go. We usually get a little bit rowdy when us boys get together. But that'll be our final one of the week. Is obviously we will bring in the new year. My wife and I will be there. We'll be Hollandless in the Williams house on Wednesday evening. But if you're up at Hilton Coliseum, have fun. I will not be there as my boycott towards New Year's Eve basketball games continues. Again, if they do an afternoon game, I will gladly go and cover it. If you want to keep ruining my New Year's Eve Iowa State, I will not be participating in this. You'll have to settle for Rob Gray, which is probably much better for everybody involved. Thanks to the Iowa Clinic Men's Center, iamenscenter.com, for sponsoring the podcast. Remember, we'll start our game chats courtesy of the Iowa Clinic Men's Center coming up this next Saturday as the Cyclones take on South Carolina. That's how they say it. My mom's from South Carolina. My mom, my great uncle Dean, God rest his soul, is an old journalism professor at South Carolina. My mom was born and raised there, Kirk.
That's amazing.
So they don't call it South Carolina. If you're there, they go South Carolina. That's how they all say it.
Well, believe it or not, I've spent some time in Alabama for work, and one of the takeaways I had from people in Alabama, which I'm sure they're all very nice, is that no matter how smart the person is down there I'm talking to from Alabama, I just cannot believe they're actually that smart.
This, by the way, that they talk.
Yeah, the most popular way I heard Alabama said down there was Alabama. like trying to mesh like four syllables into half.
Yeah, I feel you. I hear you.
With a southern drawl, and it's just like.
Yeah, that's all my relatives. I totally get it. Well, you gotta hear you gotta go through the family tree and read the names on mine. It's great. Yeah, but anyways,
next podcast.
Mama Williams will be she'll be a little bit torn on Saturday when the Cyclones take on the Gamecocks. But nonetheless, thanks to Kirk Holland, the Encyclopedia, for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Have a great New Year's, everybody. So long.